This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out Braintree V.0 SDK. With one simple integration, your customers get every way to pay. To learn more and try out the sandbox, go to braintreepayments.com/currentgeek.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world and you, to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt. Hello.
Hi there, Scott Johnson.
Hi there, Tom Merritt. Are you as exhausted as I am after E3 week, or is that just me?
No, because last week when we didn't do a show because I was off on another job, I was even more exhausted. So now I feel revived. I feel like finally it's a real weekend because I get to kick it off with Current Geek.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I selfishly did not cover every single press conference live like you did. So it's no wonder you're
I went all out this year, and I in some ways I regret it. In other ways, I'm really
Somebody's
happy.
Somebody's
got to
do it, man. You did a great job.
Well, thanks. It was a lot of fun. And I can't wait to find out what particular Skinemax feature that you were in while you were gone for a week. It's going to be great when that comes out. Oh, wait, it was something else. Hey, what's going on? We have a guest. Let me introduce him. He is a friend of ours and a guy who should have been on the show a long time ago. Sometimes we just finally get around to people that made sense in the beginning, and that would
be... Too many people make sense.
I know. Too many sensible people. Dan Patterson, who works at Gawker.com, but you can find him at danpatterson.com and find all the crazy globe-trotting things he does. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, gentlemen. It's great to join you, too, in this... It is the weekend. Current Geek is my weekend.
Is it? Good. I know that you are a listener of the show, so hopefully we do you proud here today while you're with us.
I try to be. I'm peripherally geek, but Current Geek brings me in from the periphery to the center.
That's good.
The delicious core.
Yeah,
that's our mission statement.
You've been everywhere and done everything, I feel like, and it's always when I get an email from you. Except this show, exactly. He's been in war zones he's been everywhere. But now, finally, he can tell all his friends he was on this show via Skype, and it starts with the headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what do we got?
Oh, Herbert Hoover. Dee Bassinge is your best friend. He submitted the sad news that Sir Christopher Lee died last week at the age of 93.
That's pretty good.
Not bad. If you don't know Christopher Lee, he was in more than 250 films, so you must not watch a lot of movies. Lee played Dracula in the classic Hammer films of the 1950s. He appeared in The Wicker Man, which he considered his best role. He played the Bond villain Scaramanga in The Man with the Golden Gun. And of course, most recently to the geeks of the world, he was Saruman in the Lord of the Rings trilogy and Count Dooku in many of the Star Wars franchises, including a couple of the prequels. Lee was also a heavy metal musician, became the oldest living Billboard Hot 100 artist in 2013 with a song called Jingle Hell.
Was it a Christmas? It must have been a Christmas cover of some sort.
Well, you might be right. I hadn't thought of that. Thanks to Jenny Josephson for digging up that factoid.
Oh, that's pretty good. He was... So on the morning stream not too many days ago, on the day he died, Brian Ibbett decided to play one of these metal covers, and it's really kind of good. Like, I read that he was respected by the metal community and that they weren't, it wasn't just simply, isn't that great, you know, Saruman's into metal or whatever, but like they really praised his technique and the sound he brought, and it brought this kind of gothic thing back that we haven't had for a while. And like
he was 91 when Jingle Hell hit the charts.
Yeah. What do you think, Dan? What do you think of that?
Was he vocalist or was he like that cool bass player who just lurked in the background?
Vocalist. He was singing. He was like, brrr, like just, I don't even know what to compare it to. Like maybe Ronnie James Dio, but many octaves lower, kind of.
You remember those things called VHS cassettes that we used to slide into those things?
Vaguely.
Public libraries, you remember those too. I so associate Christopher Lee with the VHS cassettes you could rent at the public library and my childhood of watching him in the weirdest stuff because they were free and cool. Yes, right.
Well,
precisely that.
Here's a VHS cassette.
I would slide Christopher Lee into my VCR and as a young child.
Wow. I remember being a little freaked out by him when I was younger. Anything he'd be in, he's very imposing figure, 6'4", which is a little tall for your average actor. And that voice has always been formidable, more so lately as he aged. Tom, of course, has a VHS tape right near his desk like some kind of psycho. And I'm going to play a little taste of it. Listen to this. Just a little taste. There you go.
When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw.
So that one's a little more, that one's a little more country.
That didn't sound very metal.
No. I just picked it at random on YouTube, but there it is. And you know what? We will miss him. The guy clearly one of those actors that could have gone on forever had life allowed him to, and you know, he'll be missed.
Nate Bob submitted this next one. The FCC has proposed a $100 million fine for AT&T over the way it informed unlimited users about speed throttling. AT&T has 30 days to respond, after which the commission will review the proposal and make a decision on the fine. So when you see they've been fined, it's wrong. They probably will be fined, but they haven't been fined yet. The FCC says AT&T did not properly inform customers when reductions would happen and how much the speeds would drop, and that's why they're finding them in violation of transparency requirements of the Open Internet Order of 2010. Also, you'll see inaccurately reported that it's the violation of the Internet Net Neutrality Order that just went into effect, and that's not true. It's part of the 2010 order, the only part of the order that was not disallowed by the court.
So midweek, you were saying that they followed the letter of the law in this particular case, but they could have done more, and that's what this finding is? Because, I mean, they adhered to it in terms of, you know...
Well, the FCC is saying they didn't follow the letter of the law, I guess. I feel like they did. The AT&T, cause, and that's what AT&T says. They said, hey, we told people we would throttle them. We said it's unlimited, but with these restrictions. And FCC says, no, unlimited means unlimited. You didn't tell them at what point they would get throttled. You didn't tell them how much they would get throttled. And the FCC even says you didn't tell them what effect the throttling would have on things like video, and therefore you're in violation.
Dan, you're a guy who travels a lot and has to use cell phones everywhere and has sucky connections on things when you can't help it. This must mean something to you in terms
of... Yeah, yeah. In fact, this linked like justice. I mean, the amount doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter to me whether they actually get fined or not. I do want to be fair. But, man, every single time, in fact, the points that Tom just made about not being informed, I asked AT&T, I inquired after this happened at the 2012 RNC, Republican National Convention. I was throttled like crazy, and then I was throttled at the DNC, and then at Comic-Con right after that, I was throttled. So I asked them, when I got back in November, I said, can you please tell me how much data I will get after being throttled and when this kicks in, because it doesn't really seem to be about 5 gigs. It kind of seems arbitrary. And I had a heck of a time getting that information. I never found out. So this, I mean, this feels like justice.
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, I want to feel that way because I liked my grandfathered plan, and I didn't like how they were truly treating me like a dying grandfather with it. And that sort of bugged me. But the bigger question is, if you went from the RNC and the DNC straight to Comic-Con, who had better cosplay?
Oh, there is no question. Comic-Con is like the chaser for all things politics.
All right, good. I was going to guess, uh-huh. Especially the RNC must have, all the elephant costumes must be.
One of the craziest guests.
Yeah, we do, dude.
That's a loaded question. Don't answer that.
Yeah, you don't have to answer that.
CaddyCon wanted us to talk about the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission in the U.S., first ever action against a crowdfunding project. The FTC imposed a suspended fine against Eric Chevalier for raising $122,000 on Kickstarter to make a board game, The Doom That Came to Atlantic City, and then spending that money on anything but making the board game, The Doom That Came to Atlantic City. Chevalier must also honor any stated refunds. If they find that he has any money left, he'll have to pay the fine. It's suspended because he says, I'm broke. And this is, if you recognize the name, the game that Cryptozoic came in and completed and delivered to backers, but it had nothing to do with the person who originally raised the funds that happened. That was just Cryptozoic being cool about
That's fantastic in a way. I didn't know. Yeah. I mean, I have friends at Cryptozoic, but I didn't know about this. Like, I didn't know they picked that up and ran with it. So at least they made good in that way, or at least they helped make good. And I don't know what their, like, how they benefited. Maybe they just hope they'd make it up on the back end. I'd love to know more about that story, but this does mark the first time when this has happened. And I have a feeling, and I could be wrong, that this won't be the last. And if anything, I hope what it does is it at least puts out there that, hey, you know, Kickstarter isn't just a fraud-friendly platform that anybody can go and screw around with. And I'm not even sure this guy meant set out to be a fraud with it. But since that's how it turned out, it may make people think twice, right, before they jump in with a new project.
Yeah, this feels like the well, let me ask you guys, does it feel like the growing up of Kickstarter, especially with games? Because that's how it feels like with me, that these are just the growing pains, and it's nice to see something like this happen, because we're moving into an age where, you know, maybe consumers were a little more naive 5 years ago than they are now, and stuff like this just kind of helps move things forward.
Probably. I mean, what's interesting about Kickstarter for me, and I think this is the effect it has on most people who are serious about doing a project and really want to see it through, really want to make good on what they promise and all of that. I think there's a built-in human need to not fail everybody on that level. And the bigger a Kickstarter is, the more pressure there is. I mean, some of the people I've talked to after successful Kickstarters are the most stressed out people I've ever talked to, because they genuinely want to see it through and make good on every promise they make. And I'm about to launch one for my comic strips. Finally, I'm putting a book form of this thing together. And by some standards, it'll be a very small one. Who knows? But I'm still feeling that pressure, right? That heat of make sure you're promising the right things, that you can deliver on those, and try to over-deliver and you know, not promise stuff that's too crazy that will make it hard in the end to do that, or things that could, you know, what kind of contingencies have come up to change everything. So I think the system already encourages that, and the pressure of that makes everybody want to do well, because your only other option is come in, do the fraud, and then disappear off the radar. Well, I'm not going to do that. I don't have a life where I can just leave off the radar. Well,
don't rule anything out, Scott.
All right. Radar it is. But you know what I mean?
I'm not saying you should do it, but you consider all the options before you make a decision.
Sure, sure.
It's like positive peer pressure. Like, you don't want to be... You are definitely going to be that guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, that's the con side of that that calculation, right? Is nobody wants to be that guy. And having done several Kickstarters, I can say the most stressful part is when you're trying to make sure you didn't miss delivering anything to people. Because even and several people are like, "Oh, I don't care," but there are people who do care, and you want to make sure you dot all your I's and cross your T's. And I think this is the exception that proves the rule here, that the fact that this is the first ever action against a crowdfunding project just shows that all of those fears about, oh, people are going to raise the money and then just take off with it, is not happening in mm-hmm. the vast majority of cases.
Yeah, they're not taking off. This guy's a rare exception. And the chilling effect isn't stop making projects. I think the chilling effect is don't, you know, think real hard about your project. And that benefits all of us. And so I'm okay with it even being held up as this exaggerated example, because maybe there are others we haven't heard about, or they're smaller or whatever, but at least we have this one where everybody who really wanted to do a good job in the first place can double their efforts to make sure they do the best they can. And maybe people who are a little on the fence can go, "Ooh, you guys, you know, I don't know about this. This isn't the easy money we maybe thought it was." So I don't see as any of this as a negative thing, at least on the PR front.
Captain Kipper has exciting news that the Fallout 4 Collector's Edition will include an actual Pip-Boy wearable sleeve.
Yep.
That you can drop your phone into. Collection edition costs $120, ships November 10th, 2015, and it's sold out at Amazon, GameStop, and Best Buy. Sellers have posted the codes for the Pip-Boy editions that they have pre-purchased on eBay, but they're charging a lot more than $120 in most of those cases. You can track restocking progress at nowinstock.net, but Bethesda warns that supplies are going to be very limited. Unless, of course, they find some more inside a new Coca-Cola crate.
Oh, that'd be great. When they announced this, I was on the watching the stream with John Jagger, and he and I were watching it and recording it. And when they showed that, I was kind of, I don't know, covered in the hype machine that was their event, because I love Fallout. I love everything Bethesda does for the most part. I was super stoked. And as soon as they said it, I said, "Yep, I'm getting that collector's edition, no question." And then things kind of wore off. A couple hours later, I thought, I really don't think I want to get that, because here's the problem. I'm going to put it on once. I'm going to put the phone in there and go, "Look, you guys, what it does." And then I'm never going to wear it again.
Like, plus, I'm going to spend that on Fallout Shelter this weekend.
Right,
anyway.
Right. You're going to buy some lunch boxes. That's a better use of your extra points.
Destroyed me already.
Think of how many lunch boxes you could buy.
Exactly. So I don't know. I mean, so I guess that answers my question, Dan. You're not really interested in running out and getting this thing.
I mean, I'll get not the collector's edition, and I will spend a lot more than I need to on Fallout Shelter this weekend.
Yeah, that game's good. Tom was playing it right before the game. We could do a little impromptu review. Scott says 4 out of 5 stars. Tom, what do you say?
Sorry. What? I was trying to rush some power. I didn't hear what you said.
Somebody freaked me out. I feel like an idiot now, but somebody sent me a screenshot of a guy with headphones on in a little booth in one of the rooms in a shelter with headphones on and a microphone saying something like, if I talk as much as I can, maybe someone out there will hear me. And then his name was Scott Johnson. And I thought, oh my gosh, somebody at Bethesda knows the shows and has put up this thing in the game. And I was freaking out. And then the guy told me, no, you can change the name of the character. So I just thought it'd be funny if this radio guy was you. And I went,
I named my first child Benjamin Button.
Oh, that's perfect. That's very
nice. I thought maybe it would make him old right away, but it didn't work.
Ibbot and I do something a little bit weird. We have a guy who is the dedicated sire of all the children. He just sits in a room and we send women in there. That's kind of bad.
It's like you put a guy out to stud and fall out children?
Yeah, basically. That's his job. Anyway.
It's like, you guys should look into horses. This works out for you.
All right.
My review is I can't write a review because I'm too busy playing Fallout Shelter. And even with just the joke of launching it right then, I was like, oh, crap. I have a lot of things
children.
To play. Yeah. Hey, Guy from Trinidad notes that CD Projekt Red announced today, or earlier this week, actually, that more people play Witcher 3 Wild Hunt on GOG.com than on Steam. 690,000 people, to be exact. In fact, more PC copies were activated on GOG than all other PC platforms combined, which means if you do the math, the majority of the 4 million copies sold were purchased for a game console. But still.
Yeah, still... I mean, those numbers aren't a surprise to me, but it's good to see goodoldgames.com do well. I mean, that is CD Projekt's service, so in a real way, they're
kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and they're basically Steam in that regard. So they're like,
but it's not like EA where you can't get the game on Steam.
Correct,
right?
Correct. They are very open to saying let's have our stuff on other multi-party platforms like Steam. They always have been. The nice thing about everything they put out on GOG.com is it's all DRM free. That's one of their big things. They have a real interesting culture that way as CD Projekt. But this would be like, you know, as a comparable example, this is like Valve making Half-Life 3 and then having it be the most sold on Steam, but also there's console versions that sold really well. So it's very similar to that. And I think it's great. And I'm super stoked to see those guys doing well with that platform. And gamers respect it. There's not a lot of hate for it the way there is for Uplay and Origin and other competing services. So it's pretty cool. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah. So my question is for you guys. It's been like a month or so since Witcher 3 has been out, right?
Yeah.
I've held off on this mostly because of the violence, and I hate to sound like a stodgy old person, but it's hyper violent, and I don't know how I quite feel about that. But it looks like an amazing game. So how are you a month into it?
Well, I would call. It's funny. I'd say it's actually a lot less violent than
2.
I expected. Yeah, 2. I think 2 is more gory for sure. This one is definitely, I mean, they're going for darker stories. It's very, you know, the political intrigue in this place is crazy and super cutthroat and, you know, nobody likes him. So there's a lot of negativity toward him and you're trying
but
to be
heroic.
But
good story, though.
Yeah, but very good story. So
that's what I want.
I would say that it's got like the political side of the Game of Thrones books and the Lord of the Rings side of kind of just fantastic creatures. And then inside of that is their own mix of, I think their own original mix of things, which is kind of the Witcher himself. Like Geralt
that
is a very
unique
thing. I really like it. It's probably, I mean, who knows how the rest of the year shakes out, and Fallout 4 coming out this year may change things. But right now it's the best RPG you can buy. I think it's fantastic. And you're really not forced to do crazy violent things, or, you know, a lot of people complain that you can have sex with everybody, but you really can't. And for those you want to, you don't have to. Like, you can kind of avoid all of that.
Yeah.
And I like a game that lets me kind of BioWare style choose the kind of personality I have. And that's totally letting me do that.
So that's my issue is, you know, violence is what it is. And my issue is less about violence itself and more about violence as a shock tactic or sex as a shock tactic. And less like, let's distract from story by having sex and violence. Like, that's great. But I want the story.
Sure. I think you're get it here. More than 2. So if your comparative experience is 2,
yeah,
I think 3 is way more refined in that regard.
All right, I'm in. Yeah. There goes the rest of my money.
All your shelter money. straight into, I see what you're doing. I like it.
Well, here's something.
Opportunity cost.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, here's something you won't have to pay for, but you do have to pay for cable to get it. Diva Singh has the news that Stars, the cable channel, they're the folks who brought you Boss and Torchwood Miracle Day and Ron Moore's Outlander, to be fair, has officially made a direct-to-series order for a TV adaptation of Neil Gaiman's novel American Gods. The series was developed and written by Hannibal and Pushing Daisies creator Brian Fuller. Gaiman will be an executive producer on the series, and they're launching a casting search for the lead role of Shadow Moon right now. I'm saying, Dan Patterson, I don't know where the casting's happening, but...
Yeah. Get in there, man.
I told you guys about the reality TV part of my life.
No,
I probably haven't.
What?
This is, you know, the... If
it's
you
happening right now.
If you can't wait for the TV series, which is like the best geek news of the week, in my opinion. But I just grabbed the 10th anniversary Audible version of American Gods with the full cast recording, and it is so good.
Oh.
So if you can't wait to watch us on television, you can watch it in your mind's eye with that Audible American Gods.
That really surprises me because they already had a really excellent Audible version read by George Guidel, who pretty much owns every book I ever read. I just love his voice. And you're telling me that the cast stuff's maybe even better? That's super exciting.
Full cast. Some of the affectation is a little too affected, but it is fantastic, and it's kept me from getting work done for the last like 48 hours.
It's an incredible book.
Yep.
And the
classic.
And the fact that it's easily my favorite Neil Gaiman piece of work. Period. I love Sandman. And I love a lot of things, but I really, really like this book. So. I really want him to do a good job. I like how it's read here, though, the way Tom read it. The series was developed and written by Hannibal and Pushing Daisies creator Brian Fuller. Like, there's two guys and one of them's a cannibal.
Like Hannibal, actually.
That made me laugh inside. But anyway, it Stars, so there's some concern.
Craft Services had some issues.
Yeah. Does it seem like to you, Tom, as a big, huge fan of TV, that Stars is maybe... pulling into AMC territory, they're getting it, starting to get it right. And
well, they've been trying to for a long time. And Outlander is the first, right? Yeah. Torchwood Miracle Day, I thought was okay,
yeah.
But it just didn't quite capture what I loved about Torchwood on the BBC. And it was a co-producer with the BBC. But remember, it's not like Stars has a group of people that they send out to do all the shows. Stars commissions people like Brian Fuller in this instance to do it. And I'm more concerned with that than what network it ends up on.
Mm-hmm.
As long as Stars gives him a decent budget, I've loved everything I've seen of Brian Fuller. So I'm looking forward to this.
Cool. And this isn't to say that like Camelot or what's the other one? The Gladiator one. The other Star series. Right. It's real tripey, real trashy, real terrible, kind of. And I think they have a reputation for that now. So let's hope, everybody. Join hands with me now and let's chant, please, Stars, don't screw this up. I can't quite reach it. It's weirdly digital, this experience.
Caffeine69 points out that LastPass announced this week that attackers had penetrated the password manager's network and accessed account email addresses, password reminders, server per user salts, and authentication hashes, sending most of the internet into a panic or pointing and laughing and sounding superior because they didn't use LastPass. To be clear, the database of stored passwords for other accounts, the whole reason you use LastPass was not accessed. I think most people realize that, but just in case. LastPass has put in place email verification, suggests turning on multi-factor authentication if they haven't already, and encourages all accounts to change their master password. So really, if LastPass did anything wrong here, it's that they didn't have their network bulletproof to keep somebody out, but they have very strong encryption on the passwords themselves and very quickly, although some people are like, you took 3 days. Not really comfortable with that. But within 3 days, had told people, hey, we've reset everybody. You really should put multi-factor authentication, but if you haven't, we're going to make you change your password. So I personally feel like they did the right things. Of course, you never want to hear that anything like this got hacked.
Well, the panic I heard was that all of the services, like 1Password and others, were also affected. And I don't know why people were saying that, because as it turns out, no.
What would be true is that if you use this kind of service, you are putting all your eggs in one basket.
Right.
Now, the other part of that is if you use the same email address as password recovery for all your services, you're also putting all your eggs in one basket. So Shannon Morse over at Hack5 has some really good tips. Look in her Twitter feed or just look on Hack5 for how to minimize risk if you're going to use a service like this.
Does it freak you out, Dan, having all your passwords out there like that?
It doesn't freak me out. This is inevitable. I did listen to Steve Gibson's Security Now to try to get a handle on precisely what did happen. Tom's right, of course. If you put all of your passwords into one place, this is an inevitable risk that you are taking. However, if you try to memorize all your passwords or you write them down and put them on the fridge like my parents do, you're also taking a risk. So LastPass, I think, behaved appropriately in this case. I think no matter what the password is, the point of failure that we will have to figure out how to get around in the future.
Yeah. If anyone ever asks
it's gonna happen.
If anyone asks you who runs Bartertown, say Master Password runs Bartertown. Say that. That's my advice to our listeners today. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, it's the pop quiz with Dan. He's got some questions to answer, and we have the answers or something. We'll be right back. Hey, guys. This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Braintree, code for easy online payments. If you're building a mobile app of any kind on Android or iOS, you're looking for simple payment solutions, check out Braintree. The Braintree V.0 SDK makes it so easy to offer multiple payment types, including PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, credit cards, and more, all with a single integration. You want to learn more? Also, how about this? You want to get your first 50 grand in transactions absolutely fee-free? Go to BraintreePayments.com/currentgeek.
America scores and wins.
Ladies and gentlemen, pull your table up to your chair or the other way around and enjoy some time with us in the big swimming pool we like to call the pop quiz. Dan, we are about to assault you with a quiz of 8 questions.
Assault and hash.
That sounds good. That will challenge you, I think, a little bit. You're a big MMO fan. True? Is that true?
Absolutely.
Well, then good, because your category is MMOs. I didn't even limit it to one like World of Warcraft or EverQuest or something. It's MMO history trivia.
Whoa, yeah.
So it's
all
gonna be a fun
of MMO
one.
History.
This is going to be great.
In command.
If you get one right, if you get it wrong, Tom will score the entire time. If it seems strange the way he's doing it, don't ask me. I don't know what's happening.
It's complex.
All right. Here we go. It is complex. Your first question. Are you ready?
I'm ready, but that will fail.
It's actually not your first question, but here's your real first question. What rare item in Dark Age of Camelot caused a meme in 2005 after a player freaked out after the item was ninja looted from him?
A snack box.
You are so not right. Cloud Song. The item is a rare cape/cloak. The player freaked out in a group of other players and swears up a storm. If you want to Google Stole My Cloud Song, it's a very funny meme-y video that will also offend you.
There's an opening question confidence bonus that kicks in here, though, so you do get a point.
Oh, look at that. Hey. See? I told you. What World of Warcraft raid boss was the focus of the infamous More Dots meme?
Dot Biz. I don't know.
Anixia is the correct answer. Anixia.
More a half point for the idea of a domain name being a raid boss.
All right. Fair enough. What year was Anarchy Online released?
2002?
You are so close. 2001 is the correct Almost. Answer. Yeah. I bought that game. I was into it for a long time.
I might going to get 0.009 of a point for the difference between 2002 and
2002. Fair enough. And I did play the beta in 2000, which didn't run very well on my computer. Anyway, next up, who are the developers behind the MMO Asheron's Call? And this could apply to one or two.
Oh, hold on. No. Asheron's Call.
I also played both these games. Second one was terrible. First one's still on servers. I'll give you one more hint.
No,
they later made the Dungeons & Dragons MMO that was out for a while.
Oh, tip of tongue. I also don't know.
Turbine Entertainment Software.
Yes.
Although, I don't know if D&D is still running. A lot of people liked that at the time. Anyway, next up. How many expansions are there for the original EverQuest?
For the original EverQuest?
Yeah.
14?
You are incorrect. It's old enough to drink. 21.
21.
Wow. The latest expansion, The Darkened Sea, was released October 28th, 2014. That game is still making expansions. Next question. How many professions were there in Star Wars Galaxy before the combat upgrade and new game experience was released? This is four. The thing that pissed off everybody. Sorry, go ahead.
Four?
You are incorrect. The answer is 32.
Of course it is.
Yeah, it made a lot of people
just
mad.
Just 10 short of the meaning of life.
They trimmed that down to 9, by the way. That was a very weird time for that game. And probably what killed it, but whatever. Second to last question. Ultima Online is the first MMO to become very popular, but it wasn't the first MMORPG. What is considered to be the first?
You know, if you gave this to me in a list of like, one, I would get it.
Yeah. A through D, yeah.
Nah, I, you know, whatever.
The answer is not whatever. It is Meridian 59.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Yep. All right.
Still being played.
Yeah. So we're not counting MUDs then.
No.
Yeah.
No right. MUDs. Hold on. I'm going to see if it's still up and running. Yes, it is.
The MUDs were my first multiplayer experience. I mean, mid 80s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was good stuff. Oh, my gosh. This is an ugly game. I shouldn't have looked. Ugh, that's terrible.
Avert your eyes, Scott.
Avert. All right. Final question. What company sued City of Heroes maker NCSoft over their character creation tools?
No idea.
Oh, this not is not a clue. If you think about this one, though, it makes sense to you. Okay, I'll give you a hint.
Blizzard?
No, I'll give you a hint. That game came out before WoW, so I would say your company that would sue them would be somebody who thinks your creation tools are too good because some people are breaking copyright by making characters that look a lot like ours. That's the best I can do without giving
that
it away.
That was the best.
A marvelous hint.
Any idea? No? Nothing?
Oh.
Marvel is the answer.
Hey, fantastic.
Marvel Studios. Yeah, because you could make... I remember in that game, my first day in it, somebody ran past me named Tiny Hulk, and he was exactly the Hulk in every
Come
way.
On, really?
But just little. Yeah. A little Hulk running by.
In my defense, I am terrible at all I'm not clever or witty in the least. I mean, you can ask me trivia about what I ate for breakfast, and I will fail every single one of those questions.
That's all right.
Eggs, no bacon. Wait, cereal.
Don't.
It was oatmeal.
Pop-Tarts. Ah, shoot. We got it wrong. What's funny about what you just said is you actually have made one of the more entertaining quiz contestants we've had.
Nobody's failed like I've failed.
It's not too bad. You still got some
here's
points.
Here's what you did that was perfect. Everybody sits around like, oh, God. You're just like, answer.
No.
Here you go. Here you go. Putting it on the table.
This is, you know, you play trivia drinking with your friends, and my friends just glare at me.
Yeah, I got that. I had that problem with Brian Ibbett. He's really good at trivia, and the rest of us feel like idiots.
But you know what?
You did not end up with a score of 0.
Yeah, how'd you do? What was the score?
Dan ended up with a final total of 1.509.
That's not the worst score we've had. We've had worse than that.
I think you're right.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't kept track, so I couldn't tell you who, but...
I'm sure somebody has.
Veronica?
How about a booby?
All right, great.
Yeah, okay.
Congratulations. I don't think you did too bad.
You know, I can dive down that MMO hole of YouTube, though, and the most interesting and obscure people in the entire world are talking about the most intricate things with MMOs on YouTube. And I have this little pit. You know, usually I cover horrible things like immigrant smuggling and guns. And the next thing is going to be like, I have this pitch written for my publisher about a history of MMOs and the business of MMOs. So,
So we'll bring you back on after you've done that.
No, I'll fail then too.
You can have your notes.
It doesn't matter. Trivia is fail.
All right. I'll give you a quick guess on something here. Who is this person? It's from a famous video game. Who is this?
Barry.
Who's that?
Jill
Valentine. Who's this?
Jill! I have no idea.
That one's Barry. So there you go. Jill and Barry. Jill and Barry from Resident Evil. Congratulations.
Who's buried in U.S. Grant's tomb?
You know, I never played. I never played Resident Evil.
Really? Oh, man. Nope. I just love that. That first game was such a fun experience. Mainly because I played it with a buddy of mine, and we basically played together the entire thing, and it was so cheesy and so ridiculous. It's one of those great like video game memories I have.
I am sure I own this in Steam and everywhere else, and I've never played it.
Well, one day, dude, cracks. Blow the dust off, make it happen. It's time for forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
All right, I like like Forecast because it used to be this show that Tom and I did. Now it's a segment on this show that we do, and it's a chance for us to predict the future in geeky
like
and nerdy
ways. It's like semi-retired,
right? Yeah, I'd say
you
that.
You know, like it used to be a full-time worker, but now in its dotage,
yeah,
it just kicks back. It's like, I'll do a segment.
It's like Andy Rooney, you know?
It's whittling on the porch.
Sure, Rooney could do a half hour on 60 Minutes back in the day, but we're just going to keep him around at the end to do like a few minutes.
He's dead now, right?
Yeah, I think so. Did he die?
So it's not like Andy Rooney in that way, because this segment is still alive.
Do you think in you know, wherever he is now, he's saying things like, you ever wonder why your angel wings get caught in the clouds? I think that happens. I think he does that.
I'm not sure you got him in the right place. I don't know. I'm just kidding. Of course Andy Rooney went to heaven, kids.
Of course
he
did.
Don't believe anything else.
He's fine. Don't worry about it. I'm sure Saruman will see him on his way up. All right.
All post-show commentators go to heaven.
That's right. A great movie by the animated dogs in it. We got a forecast here from Tom. And Tom, I'll let you explain. What do we have here?
So here we go. I don't know where this came from. It just popped out of my head this morning. Someday, the trend will be that people will start replacing their healthy organs. I'm mostly thinking of limbs, but I broadened it to organs because I could see people like supercharging their livers maybe or something like that with prosthetics to take advantage of increased functionality. I'm specifically thinking of digital prosthetics. Like, we are getting so good at creating. There was recently a story about a prosthetic foot that had sensors on the bottom so it could send a sense of pressure into the nerves so the person would actually feel pressure as it moved the prosthetic limb and was much easier to control that way. We're going to get to a point where these are going to be so good, people with healthy limbs are going to amputate their own limbs and put the digital prosthetics on, and it will become very controversial, especially among people who need the prosthetics, saying, well, wait a minute, you know, I'm trying to recover from adversity here, and you're just going and getting rid of a perfectly healthy body part. But it will be argued as an advanced form of body modification or even body art, body enhancement. And the way people reacted to tattoos at one point in our history, the way people react to piercings even still sometimes, this will be like that tenfold.
Will there be a... Because with these things, if science fiction has taught me anything, there's always a blowback later. So you'll have the people up front that will say, we're going to do this. And then there's a big bunch of upset people saying that's unnatural, you shouldn't do it. But then we get over that and then we move on to where it's happening. Like all the test tube babies, they turned out fine, everyone. Have you noticed? Like that controversy, kind of dumb. Everything's fine.
You just can't tell which ones are a test tube and which ones aren't. So how do we know they turned out okay, Scott?
They all have belly buttons. It's fine. And then what's the other thing? The comic books. They didn't kill anybody. Video games. We're starting to see people come into power who grew up on video games. Like these things pass. People get over their high-minded fear of whatever. But then there's this other end, which is, then there'll be a movement of naturals, they'll be called, or something. Mm. It's like, I'm keeping my leg, and there ain't nothing you're gonna. That'll be like the rebellion there. It'll be
I'm a legite.
Yeah,
I think isn't that happening in the transhuman or the posthumanism movement? I'm positive I've seen subreddits for people who are counter the transhumanism movement. I'm sure it's out there.
Well, probably. I mean, I think everything on Reddit, there's something for everything. But I'd be shocked if there wasn't already people gearing up or already living in a way that they don't want. I don't know how they're using Reddit, but they don't want any technology in their lives. Like cell phones have been completely ostracized in their life because they see that as taking
a threatening or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So what? I think it'd just be huge on the limb.
What
thing.
About? So a few years ago in the New Yorker, there was a great article called Brain Grain, and it was about stuff that's pretty commonly abused now, and we definitely see this in the esports community, like Adderall and stuff like that. But if you take the idea of a pill that you swallow and then augment it, and I must be getting this from like a Neal Stephenson book or like Transmetropolitan, the comic book or something, but a pill that augments your intelligence or maybe makes you could drink to hyper excess after you take this pill, you know, something that you can ingest and is short-term modification.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think.
Yeah, I think that will be another subculture, and that's similar to doping right now, right?
Yeah,
or like you say, the Adderall thing with esports. I think there will be people who do that because they're like, well, it's less permanent. But there will also be people who do this, and it's not so. I'm spinning it. It's not so much about performance enhancement. Because it's really easy to detect if somebody has a prosthetic leg, and I think that will remain so, although maybe not. But they're doing it because they're like, no, I want a different kind of limb, or I want wings. Mm-hmm. I want butterfly wings on my back. Like, it will be more about
aesthetic,
achieving a not even just aesthetic, but it, like, this is who I feel I am.
Yeah. And like, so I furry wanna, plus.
Yeah, I want to change my body to fit.
I want a vestigial tail. But like, in the, let's say in the case of like my liver, all right, because you brought up liver, Tom, which is a good thing to talk about. I think livers need to be healthy and functional and all that. If somebody out there wanted to, let's say it this way. Let's say somebody required intravenous drugs for pain because of a condition, and there was no way to fix that condition. So they had to have these drugs. The problem is those particular drugs just wreak havoc on your liver, will destroy it. You'll die much sooner because of it, because you've got to use this medication the rest of your life. I really like the idea of saying, come in, remove my liver, put in a thing that now processes everything better, or augment my liver with some attachment, organic attachment that's also some sort of digital thing that is
liver
better
by
at processing.
Makers.
Sure. And some
like
people,
optimization.
Yeah. And some people would use that for those reasons, but then there'd be some who would, if you could be elective like that, they'd use it to make it so they could drink all week and not have that affect their liver at all. So I suppose it has, you know, like anything, there's going to be multiple uses. But it's always one of those fun things in science fiction, you know. In Minority Report, it was those weird nipple-looking inhaler things that everybody was taking. What was it, Nuke or whatever it was? Whatever it was. Oh, no, Nuke was RoboCop 2. Anyway.
Oh.
But every science fiction thing where it's dystopic in any way seems like it's always got a future drug or a future thing. What was the Strange Days had their thing, which was like I think it was a mini disc, basically plugged into your brain, and it was euphoric or whatever.
Again, my mind goes less to the drug-taking aspect and more to the elective surgery. This is elective prosthetics. You know, I just want a more powerful hand that looks cooler and can do things that my normal hand can't.
Right. And if you are allowed to do that by law, then I will say, well, I'm going to move up to my Portland, Oregon farmhouse where we don't have any fake limbs. But we have implants, but that was back in the 2020s, so that's still okay. But you know what I mean? Like,
you get shunned because they find out you have like a minor implant.
It's not that different, I guess.
A pacemaker, get thee away, heathen.
I mean, culturally and religiously speaking, it's probably a lot like, you know, I mean, I don't know any Amish people directly, but that seems like a kind of a thing they've decided to do. So, yeah, I think you'll end up seeing both.
Here's my question. Would either of you, if it got to the point where cost was not the factor, and functionality was not the factor, and they said, look, come in today, it's outpatient surgery, you know, you'll be in and out within 2 hours, and you'll have a robotic hand, but you have to lose the hand you have now. Would either of you do it?
I was just thinking about that. With LASIK, I mean, that's, LASIK is a great example of that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's not my hand, but it is my eyes, and it's something that was, I mean, 50 years ago, inconceivable.
Yeah. Well, in my case, I'll even go the full, we'll go the full Monty here and do exactly what Tom is suggesting. So 100 years ago, they wouldn't have been able to fix me and I would be a blind person, because 2 years ago I got early cataracts and they took over my vision to the point that I was going blind, and I ended up doing two separate on each eye surgeries that took maybe 8 minutes apiece. One of them featured Led Zeppelin music in the background, with my doctor, who was a total cool hippie guy. And they literally took out, ground up and sucked out the lenses I had, that we all have when we're born, and put in two silicone metal, a combination of metal and silicone replacement lenses. They're quite literally like fake robot.
Yeah, you're pre-cyborg.
Yeah, I kind of am. I mean, they don't move on their own and don't have brains or anything, but they're essentially the materials you might expect from such a thing, and they have restored my sight. Like, literally have restored my sight. So, and it is not inconceivable to me that that sort of thing will become commonplace one day, and would also have made people think of witchcraft had it been introduced at a certain time. So that's the hurdle all of this has to get over. Because, so to answer your, so come all the way back around, Tom, to answer your question, would I do that to a hand? All of those circumstances being the same, meaning it's so common, they do it in 8 minutes, guy's done 10,000 of these. He's never had one go bad.
The only difference is that with your eye surgery, it was like, well, you do this if you want to see, right?
Yeah.
With this, it's like, oh, if you don't do it, there's no fallout. Your hand's fine.
If that's the case, yes.
Yeah.
I would still do it.
I would totally do it, yeah.
You do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about like Oscar Pistorius, right?
Wait, remind me.
Well, but he didn't have a choice.
Oh, right, he didn't have a choice.
Yeah, I guess that's a differentiation.
That's the only,
I mean,
yeah, that's the difference I'm exploring is like, would I lose my perfectly good leg, hand, foot, liver?
Yeah. Well, I mean, plastic surgery is certainly an example of major kinds of surgery that 50 years ago put you at great risk.
And in many cases, it is necessary. It's solving an issue, but in many cases, it's not. It's just elective.
So imagine a world. This isn't that inconceivable. Imagine a world where because I had early onset cataracts, I had to have mine removed and put new ones in. You guys, though, could say, well, I want the eyes with the new HUD. I want it to be wirelessly connected to my devices. I want to see map data. Like, whatever those innovations come, that like all seems like...
shelter.
Yeah, and I'd do it again. If they said to me, Scott, you can have, heads-up display stuff happen with your eyes. If they told me that tomorrow, and they just have to replace the ones they've already put in, I'd say, go. Let's do it. Wouldn't be a problem. I'd be all for it. The problem is that technology moves so quickly, though, that it's never, you know, the minute you get them, they're out of date, kind of.
Yeah, you got to hot swap your eyes.
Yeah, it's like VR. I mean, everyone's so excited about VR this year, and we're all going to probably get a Vive at the end of the year, but my gosh.
You're still on iHand 6? Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Right.
And then, you know, a whole new hardware war begins, and I don't know about any of that part, but yeah, I mean, if you told me my hand was going to be better, stronger, you
faster,
all those things, well, I don't know what we're talking about, but be able to, you know, let's say I could draw quicker. Let's say I could lift stuff better or not slam my hand in doors anymore. It wouldn't hurt anymore or whatever.
Right.
I would totally do it. Heard it here first. Give me my augments. I'm ready. It's time. That's forecast. Hey, by the way, if you folks at home have an idea for forecast or an email of any kind, send them in currentgeek@gmail.com, like this one from Paul. He says, hi, and you'll like that his name's Paul here in a minute when I say his name again. Anyway, hi, I'm Paul.
He's Paul.
That reminds me of the...
We've established that he is in fact Paul.
It reminds me of those cartoons on Nickelodeon where at the end there'd be a monkey waving and he'd go, hi, I'm Paul. You remember that? Anyway, I'm Paul, he says, and I'm wondering why you guys never talk about Warhammer 40K. It's amazing, and all true geeks should have some Warhammer in their lives. What gives? Paul, a.k.a. Paul. That's how he wrote it. Well, Paul, if that is your real name. I'm a huge 40K fan. Here's the problem, though. I never played the let's paint all our figures and pull out a board and do a Saturday afternoon of Warhammer 40K, and everybody brings all their figures and, you know, that stuff. I never did any of that. But that universe is always intriguing to me, and I have probably, I don't know, 10 or 15 video games in my library that are all 40K related. I love this idea of, you know, basically taking a fantasy universe and shoving it 40,000 years into the future and seeing what that looks like with technology and space flight and all that kind of stuff. It is a fantastic universe, and I just today on the Steam sale bought Warhammer. I forgot the name. It was like one of those colon names.
Not a true fan.
I know. See, that's the problem. But I love it. These big guys in suits, like big mech suits saying, you know, talking like almost biblical with they have names like Ezekiel and they have like a holy mission to wipe out some alien race. Like that kind of stuff is awesome fiction and I'm way into it. So, you know, I don't know about you two, but I love me some 40K. It's cool.
Yeah, aspirational. There is down the street from me in Brooklyn is a little shop that I think has disappeared from much of our childhoods in America called the Brooklyn Strategist, and it is all tabletop games. I walk by and I aspirationally look in the window and want to be playing, but it's overwhelming.
Yeah, I don't know where you start. I mean, some would probably say, well, there's like here's a beginner's guide, or there's probably things out there. But it always feels daunting and like you're getting in. It's like starting an MMO where they don't have a boost feature and there's 100 levels to do and you've never played before and it's 10 years in and you just feel like you're such a freaking noob, you know? I mean, I'd probably play better. There's a Warhammer 40K game out on Steam right now that I also bought. I forgot the name of that one too. Devastation. So, anyway, it's basically chess, but with Warhammer 40K characters. And other rules thrown in, so you can lob grenades in parts of the board that you couldn't normally. But there's also a straight-up chess mode where you just have all the rules of chess, but you've got these big space marines fighting, you know, space orcs, and they've got, you know, swords, and they do these great combat animations, you know, when they meet at a square or whatever. Silly small game, but really, really fun. So, yeah, I'm basically all in on this stuff, and I probably know more than I think I do, but I don't have a giant box full of painted figurines to take to a comic book store and make myself known, you know? That's daunting. So I don't think so.
The reason I don't talk about Warhammer 40K is the same reason I don't talk about Magic the Gathering or Pokemon, which is I have no experience with any of them.
Right. And if I gave you a big deck of Magic, what would you do?
I'd be like, this isn't like Hearthstone. I have to put these down manually? Yeah. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
And that is in no way meant to be disparaging on any of those three properties. But I try not to talk too much about stuff that I don't know anything about. So I look to people like Paul to be my Scutari Regimental advisor to my own Astra Militarum and instruct me in the ways of Warhammer.
Yeah, I'm that way with a lot of things. In fact, there are things Tom has experience with that I'm really glad I have him as a friend, because I don't feel like such an idiot when I ask him. I probably, if I had a bunch of 40K friends, we'd figure out a way to get me squeezed in there. But, you know, like D&D, a little more approachable. They've got a starter kit, and they've got all the stuff kind of laid out for you. You can plop that down in front of a bunch of people, and they can kind of have their first go at it. It's intimidating. But as a universe and as a space and as a series of books and all the other extended fiction that's in that universe, I am all up in that, and I really like it. So Paul, calm down, Paul.
You know what, Paul, though? The guy who looks over my contracts, the lawyer who looks over my contracts, George, big Warhammer 40K figurine maker.
Really?
Yeah, well, follow him on Instagram. Lawyer. He is not looking at contracts, he is painting models.
That's a strange.
And he's gotten really good.
Yeah, really.
Like, he puts them up on Instagram, and it's like, wow, man, those look great.
I want that lawyer. That's a cool lawyer.
Yeah, I'll introduce you.
Is he like a little on-call kind of guy for you or something like that?
Yeah, pretty much.
I could use some advice. Well, anyway, Dan, do you like any of this kind of stuff? Do you get into the... I guess I already asked you that. But what's the equivalent for you? Like, what's a thing where you're like, yeah, I know this, and somebody else might look at it and go, well, I'm intimidated by that thing Dan knows.
D&D, for sure. Yeah. I mean, my friends, especially with the advent of... a half decade ago, even, we were having a hard time. My old friends that we would play D&D and Vampire the Masquerade and stuff around a campfire with, we had just a heck of a time trying to do this on Skype. And then... the tools to play D&D really emerged, and we have an ongoing game that we've been diving at 2.5 years, I think, now, 3 years, where we'd every single one Sunday a month, not every single Sunday I wish, but one Sunday a month we dive into our D&D, and this is a game that goes back to our childhood, you know. So it's all things geek can and should be wonderful, but there is opportunity cost in the time of learning, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. Well, there you go. That's your email. Thank you, Paul, aka Paul. If you want to have your own sent in, current.
Mind if I call him Paul?
Yeah, you can call him Paul. I think it's fine. All right. Yeah, I don't think he minds. Any of those variations is fine. currentgeek@gmail.com is the email address. We love your feedback, so keep it coming. And that is the end of our show. Dan, it was fantastic having you on, man.
Oh, it was wonderful to be here.
We need more excuses to get Dan around on stuff. I want to get him on the instance a couple times and talk more WoW and nerding out with Dan seems like a good idea. Tell people where they can find more of you and hear you more often.
Well, soon I will work for Hulk Hogan. Until that point, you can just find me either on Gawker. I'm the UN reporter for them. And right, I love all. I wish I could be more geek. The way I make my money is like you guys. I sell my content, and the content is in like policy geek world. Yeah. But my site, danpatterson.com, I have a couple stories coming out in the next few days.
All right. Do you ever get people just go, what's the deal with I don't know. What's the deal with Canada? And then you have like a quippy comeback about some policy change or something.
I told you I'm not witty, so I don't have a quippy comeback. But I do have one of the. Well, if you really want to talk about foreign policy and the way that the machinations of different actors, and they go, dude, I was kidding. I didn't care. I was humoring you.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
that's great. We should talk about healthcare or something at some point.
Right.
I like that idea.
You want to get a good belly laugh out of policy.
Well, there you have it. Dan Patterson on Twitter. Tom Merritt, anything on your neck of the fence?
Yeah, my fence is necking with the year in tech history.
Whoa.
Just soaking stuff
mustaches?
That happened
yeah,
on
mustaches.
Days
yeah.
with illustrations by Scott Johnson.
Yeah.
You can almost see one there if you looked at the video. Check it out. TomMerrittBooks.com. Year in tech history has all the days, even February 29th. And usually at least three, if not more, things that happened in technology history on those days.
Very
like,
cool.
You know, Namco releasing an arcade game called Puckman on May 22nd.
Yeah, and people scratched out the little part of the letter there, making not a P. I would like to concur with your recommendation about that book. And then once you've got that, you're thinking, man, I sure could use some more artwork from Scott. Turns out my webcomic, Extra Life at MyExtraLife.com, turns 14 years, a couple of days ago, old. Going on 15, and decided to finally launch a Kickstarter for it to sell a book and make a book for those who want the collection. People have been begging for it forever, so it's time to do it. It's very, very close. I would say if you're hearing this now, probably within the next 4 or 5 days, we may have that up and launched. No promises, but we're really, really close, and I think there's going to be some stuff in there people are going to be blown away by. A forward by creator Jerry Conway, comic book artist Howard Porter doing the cover. He does JLA and The Flash and some Marvel stuff. The guy's amazing. And a bunch more things that are kind of hidden secrets right now. So watch for that coming up soon. And if you're interested in Nerdtacular but didn't get tickets or couldn't go for some reason and can't come see us live, swag bags are up and available on the store for those who want those and can't come. If you're coming and you have a ticket, don't worry, you've already got it. But for everyone else, you can get that separately at frogpants.com/store.
Nice.
I think that's going to do it for us.
All right.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And by the way, go to currentgeek.com. All our subscription info is there. At Scott Johnson, at Ace Detect on Twitter. Call us, leave us a voicemail, 801-471-0462. Currentgeek.com, currentgeek.reddit.com. That's going to do it for us. We'll see you guys next week.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we answer a listener question from James regarding a recent Supreme Court case on interstate commerce and fairness in taxation. James asked about why the Supreme Court deemed the double taxation on personal income is not okay, while internet use tax is acceptable. The case James refers to is Comptroller of Maryland versus Wynn. The Wynns work in a different state and live in Maryland. Maryland, like most states, collects income tax from residents of Maryland who work there or in other states, and also from non-residents who work in Maryland. But unlike most states, Maryland does not provide a tax credit or reduction for income taxes paid by residents who work in other states and have the typical income tax collected by those other states. This means residents of Maryland, working outside the state, ended up paying income tax twice. This was challenged as unconstitutional. The court ruled in a split 5-4 decision that Maryland's lack of a tax credit to avoid the double taxation was unconstitutional under the Dormant Commerce Clause. Essentially, the majority in the court deems that the state tax policy is an improper burden on interstate commerce because it hampers the ability of Maryland citizens to work in other states. Which brings us to James's question. Why is the similar imbalance in state use tax laws permissible? Use taxes are assessed against personal property purchased by a resident of the assessing state for use, storage, or consumption in that state, regardless of where the purchase took place, including online. This is a way for states to make up for lost sales and sales tax within their state, especially in the modern era of heavy internet commerce. On its surface, this type of tax policy looks unfavorable to residents in a similar way as the Maryland income tax law is for the Wynns. But one key difference from double income tax is that use taxes applied to out-of-state purchases are arguably not discriminatory against interstate commerce, but instead even-handed by making all sales to residents within a state subject to the same level of tax. In the rare circumstances where sales tax is collected by an out-of-state business shipping to a customer in another state, the customer state generally allows a tax credit to reduce use taxes by this sales tax. Thus, there does not appear to be a true double taxation problem in the sales and use tax context. The bottom line is, although the Dormant Commerce Clause may someday be used to help better regulate sales and use taxes, for now, the generally even-handed nature of these taxes, when taken in combination, probably protects them from constitutional scrutiny.
Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions or segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
Hi, this is Phil back with another game-punting pick of the week from the world of crowdfunded tabletop games. This week, we're backing Zombicide Black Plague. Yeah, just like everyone else. But not without good reason. So, Black Plague is a bit of a reboot on the Zombicide franchise. Rather than another expansion, they're launching a new setting for the game altogether, this time into a medieval fantasy world. While the core mechanics are largely the same, there are version-specific and evolutionary changes to the game as well. With this recasting of the game, Black Plague represents a good opportunity for those of us who missed out on earlier Kickstarter campaigns for Zombicide, and the exclusive and hard-to-find content therein, to get in on the game and pick up all those little extras. The change of scenery also may well just appeal to some gamers like myself who are not into the contemporary zombie theme of the core game, but who appreciate the popularity and strong reputation of the game. Black Plague has had no trouble funding, breaking through $1.5 million in the first week, and stretch goal additions have been plentiful already, padding out the value on that $100 plus pledge level. This campaign will run through July 6th, so if you've ever wanted to get in on Zombicide, or if you're just a fan of going after a zombie horde with sword and shield, this is going to be a good bet for you. For more news and reviews of crowdfunded tabletop games, check us out on the Game Punting Podcast, available in iTunes and at GamePunting.com. Happy gaming!
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.